Breaking news today on Seculo. The FBI is now searching Joe Biden's beach house.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo. We want to hear from you. Share and post your comments or call 1-800-684-3110. And now your host, Jordan Seculo.
All right, welcome to Seculo. We do have breaking news. So right now, as we are on the air, the FBI is at Joe Biden's beach house searching for more classified documents. This is his second home in Delaware. This is Rehoboth Beach. Remember, a flashback, we were told, no, there's nothing at that beach house. Take a listen. This is Karine Jean-Pierre. Again, these statements, don't make blanket statements because
no.
Personal attorneys finding documents in one place is going to lead to the FBI wanting to look at other places. But she did make the blanket statement. Take a listen.
The lawyers discovered among personal and political papers a small number of additional Obama-Biden administration records with classified markings. All but one of these documents were found in storage space in the president's Wilmington residence garage. One document consisting of one page was discovered among stored materials in an adjacent room. No documents were found in the Rehoboth Beach house. Look, I just want to underscore that this is something, again, that the president takes very seriously.
So what we learned from this is, one, the FBI does not care if you did a search and say this is what we found, because when it gets to this level, your special counsel now took over as of today.
We remember that in the first search of his house by the lawyers, this is what the lawyers involved in, they said they found the six documents. That was it. And then the FBI came in and they found dozens more.
Right, in different places, like the office.
Right.
First, we were told it was an office. It was like a library. It's an office library kind of situation. And they didn't care about Penn Biden either. We now know that they found those November 2nd, the attorneys, and then a week later-ish, sometime around mid-November, the FBI went in there too. So what is just unprecedented here is that you've got the FBI, this is live, real-time as we speak, at the President's beach home, looking for classified documents in a criminal investigation.
I want to underscore
that again. The FBI is only involved because this is a criminal investigation. The only reason there's a special counsel, the only reason you can appoint a special counsel, is if you are being investigated for federal crimes.
The predicate is the belief that a federal crime has been committed. Now, I'm watching, we have all the media on in our studios here, and it says FBI searching Biden's Rehoboth Beach home and document probe. This is the developing story that's on CNN. I mean, everybody's covering it. Here's the issue, and this is where they've gotten it wrong. And this is the problem that these lawyers did. Was first of all, they got the White House counsel involved, made no sense. If you're negotiating it now, once you started negotiating access to the current president's house, which they had to do, remember, if they didn't consent to the search of the home in Delaware, what was going to happen? They were going to get a search warrant, which means probable cause that a crime has been committed. Now, here's the problem.
We're ongoing.
They are doing this to the former president of the United States, the current president of the United States, the former vice president of the United States. And you know whose fault this is? In my view, the National Archives. And I'm holding it in my hand, and we put it up on the screen. This is our FOIA demand that we sent into the National Archives to find out what is going on here with these documents. Who did what to whom, and how did this happen? Now, interestingly, they granted expedited review, so we should start getting documents on this very, very soon. But if I was Merrick Garland and I was the Department of Justice Attorney General, you know what I'd say at this point? Having special counsels is not the way to move forward on this. I think that's a big mistake.
Oh, absolutely. It is insane because, again, this should be a document dispute. I think you bring in a special counsel if there's an indication that the documents have been used for wrongdoing. So if you are trading on the documents.
Espionage.
Making money off those documents. Then I think it's a much clear-cut crime. Now, they've said here they're going to determine if there's a crime. A crime has been committed because he wasn't in a discussion like Trump was saying, I declassify these or this was mine or 6 months after I was out of office. This is for years, 6 years. And so you've already committed a crime by having them. So there's no question. Now, the question is, is it worth prosecuting that alone? I'd say no for all of them unless you can show a second act. The second act would be utilizing those documents for any purpose that brings you gain, which would include writing a book.
Well,
because you get paid for
Hunter Biden, who's under federal investigation, also had access to this house, which probably means he had access to these documents. Certainly the ones not in a safe. I mean, they weren't. Back for more in a moment.
secular. So again, the breaking news, if you're just joining us, is that while we're on the air, this is pretty unprecedented, that this has not happened yesterday. This is happening as we speak. The FBI, we know that these are not like 3-hour searches. No. So it'll probably go until the evening, if not to tomorrow, because we know the search of his home in Delaware took 13 hours. So imagine about the same here, 12-hour day. So we're just in the beginning, just a few hours into, as we speak, the FBI is raffling through everything at Joe Biden. That is what you have to imagine here. When they go in, now I know there's things negotiated here, so it's not like they're ripping
apart. Yeah, but
they're
going through everything.
They're not like destroying your house.
No.
Like a drug dealer, but pretty close.
Well, I mean,
they're going through everything, and if they stumble upon anything else that's criminal involving like Hunter.
I'm sure that's in the scope of what, now it depends on the scope of the nature of how they did this. But remember, it was reported last week.
But you can't come across something criminal and not report it.
Of course not. Well, they would at least report it. They may not be able to take it. But here's the thing. The fact is, I'm sure it was anything related thereto. And you got the Hunter Biden investigation going on. And these are properties that he had access to. But what's unprecedented here is the FBI is there because I'm sure that at this point, nobody trusts anybody in any of this. But Harry Hutchinson's here. From a policy perspective, I think Merrick Garland unlaunched a very dangerous predicate when he turned a document dispute, which is what this is. It was against President Trump. It was against President Biden. It is against President Biden. Same thing with Mike Pence. Turned a document dispute into literally a federal case, a federal criminal case, impaneling special counsels and grand jury subpoenas.
Yes, I think you're right. I think there was a rush to judgment on the part of Merrick Garland. And basically, we should keep in mind that he is demonstrating that at a minimum, he is simply an average attorney general at best. But I also would say that Merrick Garland has been placed in this position in part because the Biden administration has committed several errors. Number one, they consistently claim that they have been cooperating. They consistently claim that they have been self-reporting. Well, in order, for instance, to self-report, you have to report that information to a law enforcement official. They haven't done that. They consistently claim that there were no documents at the beach house. Well, there are documents at the beach house.
Well, we'll find out. We don't know that yet, but there it looks like there are.
At least there's sufficient evidence to trigger a search.
Yes.
So I think we can conclude that.
Now,
so,
would you say, Harry, though, because there's a requirement you're supposed to notify law enforcement. So the lawyers, this is what they did, which I find really interesting here. The lawyers, the outside lawyers mostly here, at least this part, find these documents when they're supervising the pack up of the Penn Biden Center. Interesting that they sent lawyers over, which means I'm surmising here, they must have known something might be there, right? Then the question is, did these lawyers have clearance to look at this document or not? Or maybe they didn't look at them, they saw the markings, and I'm not trying to impugn that at all. But is that a self-reporting? And then if it is a self-reporting, because at that point they notified the FBI that there were documents there, but it took a long time for these things to translate into actual searches going. I mean, for instance, now the one we know was back in November, that was reported yesterday, which was the Penn Biden Center, correct, Will? That was the Penn Biden Center. So that one took place in November. And then Merrick Garland knows all that this is going on with Biden, and he still appoints a special counsel on Trump. Hadn't appointed the special counsel yet on Biden.
I think that is correct, but I think the issue there was Merrick Garland had tied his own hands by appointing a special counsel to go after Donald Trump.
Yeah.
And so now the question becomes, will he appoint a special counsel to go after Mike Pence? And then
when Mike Pence declares he's running for president, Jordan, he might have to. If he's going to follow or he's going to pull this whole thing back.
Which is probably the best advice.
I don't even think he'd have to run for president. I mean, I think that, again, the FBI, because he's sucking his attention, I would imagine that's happened or happening soon.
Yeah, probably happened.
There are those negotiations. So if they didn't find anything else, maybe it kind of fizzles.
Yeah.
But it seems like if they go back that second time and they find more, that's when you really start triggering.
But the unprecedented nature.
But you would think that a special counsel would need to be appointed there.
Yeah. I still think you should pull them all back. But the interesting thing to me is this is the third search now by the FBI of the sitting president of the United States' home.
Right. And where does it end? And like you said,
what is the end?
It's interesting that Merrick Garland had information back in November, and still, so he knew there was issues with Biden, and he still appoints a special counsel
on Trump.
On Trump, exactly. And that does not make sense, because then he would have to know, I can't do it on Trump. I know these documents are there on Biden. It's just very curious why he would go appoint a special counsel on Trump when he knew that Biden had the exact same thing going on.
Because if it's this idea that, you know, as soon as Trump announced he was running for president, that was the predicate to this. Well, Biden's made it pretty clear he's running for president. He's not made any announcements right now, because with all this going on, probably not a great idea. But how does this play out politically? What do you think? Because legally, this thing needs to be unraveled here. If you're Jack Herr, if you're Robert Herr and Jack Smith, the two special counsels right now, you know what you're thinking? Why did I accept this position?
Yes. I mean, because it puts you in these bizarre situations. So now he's got, likely this is his first day, so this was not his move.
Right.
So now he's got to deal with all of the FBI moves previously. And we still don't, you know, we've focused a lot on houses, because that's easier. But then there's got to be storage facilities. I mean, no one at this point in life, when you're that age, with the amount of jobs he's had, and doesn't have storage facilities of junk and pieces of things that have been given to him and stuff like that, that you just don't usually put in your house, or that, you know, moving around. And so what about those facilities as well, which are even less potentially secure if they're just a regular storage facility that
you know,
like normal folks would
when they for. Compared this to the Trump situation,
so
the media,
different now.
The media was trying to make all these distinctions, Harry, right? This was, it's apples and oranges. Well, now it's like, you know, one is apples, the other one
had documents in one place.
A bushel of cherries or something. I mean,
one had documents in one place. They weren't being
secure.
Moved around.
The FBI said, will you make it more secure? And the answer was yes. Here, you've got documents in three locations, and we don't know. It's so interesting to me also, Harry, that they announced what the documents topics were in the first batch. Ukraine, which should have kicked off red flags for the FBI right away, frankly. Ukraine, the UK, always found that one a little odd. And then Iran.
Yes.
We've heard nothing about what these other documents topics are. I understand why they're not releasing the documents. They're classified, but we don't even know what the topics are.
The real issue, I think, is the public perception that the Justice Department has placed its hands on the scale. Because if you remember, when Donald Trump's Florida house was raided, they had pictures, they had cameras, they had helicopters. But we don't have the same amount of information, if you will, with respect to President Biden. Keep in mind that before the documents were found at the Penn Biden Center, they were in some other location. That location needs to now be searched. I have no idea where that location is, but I think, as Jordan correctly points out, they were probably in some storage area. Are there more documents still there? But I think President Biden has done himself a disservice, first, by not allowing President Trump to exert privilege with respect to certain documents. This set up this entire scenario, and now I think it's come back to bite President Biden.
Yes.
And many people would say that's poetic justice.
Yeah, but the interesting thing with this, I think it's bad for the – I do personally think this is bad for the country. That's my view.
Well, it is. It
makes us look like –
absolutely.
Like,
we don't
keep saying
know what's going
Venezuela.
On.
I mean,
and where does it stop?
Well,
that's
we got,
the issue.
We got,
when does it stop?
The former the former vice president, the former president, and the current president all under criminal investigation. That is not a good look on an international scene. And I will tell you, and Jordan can tell you this too, in representing a president, that when you are dealing with these kind of domestic matters, which this is, it does impact how you're viewed in the world stage.
Yeah, I think more so than, like, you know, you could say how politically you could try. I think Donald Trump's been better at using it to his own advantage, because here you have Joe Biden look like a hypocrite. So Donald Trump looks more like the persecuted every time, because it's like, how many times are they going to go after this guy in every state, in every federal government, every House committee, every Senate committee? So that's one thing. You can kind of flip it and use it to political advantage. Here you can't when you're Joe Biden. So there's the political, that's domestic U.S. politics. But right, when you go to the world, this is why the Chinese leader Xi says democracy And temporary leaders who don't have real power will not work in the new age, in the 2020s.
I hope
and it
he's
doesn't
wrong.
Work because you can't make decisive plans. You can't be decisive as a leader because even if, and he was just talking about to the election issues, not just the being investigated for wrongdoing, but that just having elections alone so close together makes it where the world can't predict you and you can't predict. So that's why we don't have better infrastructure plans. That's why we don't have our own semiconductor plants in the U.S. because we don't have leadership that agrees for a long enough period of time.
This is a reason to support the work of the ACLJ. Those FOIA requests are in on these topics. We're giving you this information on this broadcast on these topics. ACLJ.org, ACLJ.org. Become a member, support the work of the ACLJ.
All right, welcome back to Secure. We're taking your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110 to talk to us on the air. That's 1-800-684-3110. So again, just breaking news. If you're just joining us, because this is happening as we speak, and we'll take your calls on this. We're talking some other issues too at 1-800-684-3110. But right now, Joe Biden's beach house, which by the way, is not like a small residence either. It's a 4,800 square foot house. So it's a lot for the FBI to look through. It's not heavily like protected. I don't know if there's a lot of security around. There probably is more now. I think they built a fence around it. I'm not sure.
You know what your mother would say? A lot of steps.
This is a lot of steps. But that you have to build it high there, of course, because of hurricanes and weather. But again, so it's a sizable house with many garages to look through for documents, as you can see, and plenty of rooms. And this is one which is not always, you know, occupied.
Yeah.
So the question is, does it take 13 hours? We were told by his attorneys that they're going to let us know. Now, I don't know what they're going to let us know. I think they're hoping that they can let us know that they didn't find anything. That's probably what they're hoping. But they're going to have to say, they probably won't tell us the topics ever again.
No, you'll never hear that. No, because they're not going to be good.
We will know if they found anything.
But I love this. Under DOJ's standard procedures in the interest of operational security and integrity, it sought to do this work without advance public notice, and we agreed to cooperate. First of all, there's nothing standard about this procedure. They are having FBI agents go through the president of the United States House. Not the former president, the current president. Okay, so it's not standard operating procedures. You know, on all these other raids, of course, they have, you know, multiple media there, and CNN just happens to find out. The problem with all this is now you're on residence, you're on Area 3. You had the office and now the two houses. So we'll see later this afternoon what happens. But meanwhile, we have a victory to report that we're very excited about because we took quick action and got a good result.
Yeah, that's right. So I mean, we're the move on Omar.
Yes.
So we had, we've been working on this petition for a long time. So we put together, it's nearly 400,000 people on the petition. And this petition called for, again, the House to take action against Omar Tlaib as well. And because there never was a censure vote even.
Right.
Directly on them. There was a censure vote condemning anti-Semitism twice because of what Ilhan Omar said. But the victory here is that yesterday, we saw the few Republicans who were holding out on voting to remove Omar. And we wanted to try to target, make sure they knew how many Americans were concerned about this issue. So one of those Republicans was Victoria Sparks.
344,121 of you.
And so one of those is Victoria Sparks from Indiana. I think you most know her because she's a Ukrainian immigrant to the United States. So she's been in the media a decent amount since the war in Ukraine. And she's heavily accident. So if that's who we're talking about.
Yep.
She was a holdout here, didn't know if she agreed with the procedure, and she has now changed to a vote to remove Omar. So that makes it a much, it's still, I mean, it's slim margins with anything now in the House, but it gives that kind of buffer that McCarthy needed to say,
you could have people, because when you only got a 4 or 5 point buffer zone, you can't afford to lose people.
And I'll tell you what we're doing is we're using these media reports to target more. So Matt Gaetz, some of you may think of him as like a conservative hero. He now is saying he doesn't know if he wants to vote to remove Ilhan Omar.
I think he's saying that right now he's leaning towards not
voting against her. And so, you know, he's kind of an antagonist to whoever's in charge, but we're making sure he knows.
You're darn right.
Close to 400,000 conservative activists have called for her removal. So
it's hard for me. I'm not going to say why I think he's doing this, but I will say why.
I think because he thinks this will happen to him, which I think, has he been removed from committees before?
He has not.
He's on the Judiciary Committee.
Correct. So, I think this is publicity. And we're talking about his name, and you normally wouldn't be, because he's a member of Congress that's had his own issues he's had to deal with. Having said all of that, let me say this. It's not an easy process. CeCe's going to explain it to you. This is what has to happen for all this to come together to keep these people off this committee.
Yeah, so we're still waiting for the Democrats to submit. They have to submit their formally submit their resolution outlining who they have, their picks for the Foreign Affairs Committee. Once they outline their picks, then there's a whole nother resolution that outlines both parties' picks, and that has to go to a vote. And then once that's voted on, then there'll be a separate resolution to strip Omar from her slot on the Foreign Affairs Committee that will have to go for a vote. But we know that last night the House Rules Committee voted 9-4 to advance that resolution to oust Omar. So we're waiting on basically the Democrats to get their resolution saying who they want on that committee, and then there has to be an official vote on a resolution from both parties of who they want on the committee, and then after that will be the ousting
Our
vote.
Position is that she should not be on these committees. Let me be clear. That's the American Center for Law and Justice position, and it's the position of 345,000 of you that are listening and watching us right now. Having said that, Representative Ken Buck from Colorado and Nancy Mace from South Carolina, Georgia, Jordan, have also indicated they will not be supporting the ouster. We know Mace. I mean, well, we know Buck, too. I mean, what's going on there?
You know, these are the usual folks who kind of, what about the procedure? What about this? And again, I don't know if they just want their name out there because it gives them another opportunity to go on TV and be persuaded or get something else out of it. I mean, I feel like there's a lot of that going on still in this House Republican move. It's like, okay, fine, I'll go along with this, but I want this.
You know, it's interesting because I'm watching some of the comments coming in on Rumble and Facebook.
She doesn't
and YouTube.
Have any like ethics issues.
And
about.
On the Matt Gaetz thing, hey, you know, you can't have a double standard here. You can't say, well, you know, you could say you agree with him in this position and not that position. But to say that this is not a conservative position is ridiculous. This is a conservative position, not having Ilhan Omar on the Foreign Relations Committee. Okay? Not that complicated, in my view. Let's go ahead. We got a call coming in on the documents. We should probably take it, too.
Yeah, Julie's called in from Oregon on line one. Hey, Julie.
Yes. Hello, CeCe. Hello, gentlemen. Thank you for your work that you do. We just always appreciate it. My question is, it seems like an elephant in the room that even though the DOJ may have sent out a memo to all presidents yeah. and past presidents, past vice presidents, how come Obama hasn't come up in this conversation? Because if it were left up to him to bring forward documents that he may have, I think many of the American people wouldn't feel comfortable
Here's
about
why.
That.
You know what he did, which was the way it should be done, I think, in my view? And he did it, and George W. Bush did this as well. Everything went to the National Archives and GSA, Government Service Administration, everything.
I mean, they went
These guys didn't take anything. And then they requested documents that they would like for their libraries.
So they partnered with National Archives to build facilities where they were going to build their libraries.
Yes.
So Obama's is still being built. Bush's is at SMU. But the actual document storage facility is run by National Archives. So they don't get to go in and grab whatever they want.
It's a really good question.
But National Archives did say.
To all of them.
We might need to go look at everybody who's alive.
Yeah, because we don't know. Because I think what we're going to find is they don't have tracking.
They don't. I don't think they do.
I don't think they do either.
No, I think they operate in the 1980s.
Yeah, these documents, lost documents or just now found documents, I think they would have been on top of it and not having people self-report. I think they would have known.
I think that's right. I do think that's right. I think we used the line, Will reminded me, institutionally incapable of self-correcting. They need to self-correct here. And the way to self-correct this is for Merrick Garland to call up the dogs on all the Department of Justice on all three, president, former president, and former vice president, and get these documents back, and then figure out with the National Archives, what are we doing wrong here? What policies need to be put in place? We're going to take your calls in the second half hour, 1-800-684-3110. We're talking about all these issues, FBI at Joe Biden's house in Rehoboth Beach as we speak. Support the work of the ACLJ, including this broadcast. You all are watching us or listening to us on radio. It's on the air because of your support. Go to ACLJ.org for that. ACLJ.org.
Keeping you informed and engaged. now more than ever. This is Seculo. And now your host, Jordan Seculo.
All right, welcome back to Seculo. This is also just a kind of break for the ACLJ. As you know, we represent some of the families of the students who had those pro-life beanies on. They were at the National March for Life in Washington, D.C., and they went to the Air and Space Museum, which is gets $1 billion a year, the Smithsonian, from our taxpayer dollars. So it is like a government entity in that sense. It's like a private partner, public partnership. But because it receives so much, you can treat it like the government. And so this is not like being kicked out of a mall for wearing something that, you know, or it's not private property, put it that way. And they were harassed. Vulgarities used against these students, forced to take off the beanies. It was freezing cold that day. And it was also a way they were using security-wise for the students. It was like, how to identify your groups, you see? I mean, it was also, right. You'll see this a lot at big marches, especially when there's young people. But even folks who came to our office to the event, they all a group from a pregnancy center all had the same color jacket so that they could find each other. Yeah. In that mass of people. Well, you're talking about minors. That's even more important that you... And just every school group from D.C. goes and wears matching shirts. So if this is offensive, what if you went to like a Christian school and you just went to, you know, Saint whatever school and it has a cross on your shirt? That's the same kind of treatment, right? Because that could be offensive to some people.
Yeah, but this is...
So again, this is what it's normal in D.C. because groups wear matching outfits all the time for security purposes. And what is not right... is being harassed because of your specific viewpoint on your beanie.
Yeah, and this is
you think
classic.
If it said support abortion rights, they would have been harassed?
Could you imagine? Of course not. But they think against the abortion distortion factor. However, the American Center for Law and Justice, we're on top of this, folks. And, you know, whether it's going to... Nothing is off the table.
Out of the museum.
Nothing is off the table in our approach on this, and that includes litigation if necessary here. Because what they did to these students was outrageous. It was a travesty, and... as Jordan said, if it was the other side, they would not have done it. So this is not a speech-free zone. No one's getting up on a soapbox saying anything. It's a passive thing. It's a statement on your beanie that all the students wore because this way the teachers could look over and say, there's our students. And it said, pro-life, pray the rosary. And that was it. There it is. Rosary, pro-life. That's all it said. And that created the crisis for them.
That's the most ridiculous thing, because when you say pro-life, tell me why is that a problematic statement? It should not be. People protecting life and just saying pro-life, for the Smithsonian, for those guards to make fun of them, to harass them, to kick them out, to be joyful and gleeful as they were leaving, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, let me read you what the Smithsonian is now saying. Asking visitors to remove hats and clothing is not in keeping with our policy or protocols. We provided immediate training to prevent a reoccurrence of this kind of incident and have determined steps to ensure this does not happen again, said Allison Wood, the museum's deputy director of communications. Not enough for me.
No, I mean, this is, again, you can't harass minors with vulgarities and not pay a price.
Right.
Exactly. Why is that staff just getting retrained? They should be fired.
Absolutely.
You anywhere else, if you started cursing at a minor, you'd be fired. Only if it's about abortion would the federal government and this institution protect you. Which, by the way, I mean, there's a lot of controversial stuff in the Smithsonian. I'm fine with... yeah, but like art, you know, they can put up whatever art displays they want, and some of it's very controversial. That's fine.
They're getting in trouble for that right now. But that's...
yeah, but okay, that's a different debate, because they get federal dollars. So there is a role for Congress to step in and say, hey, that's gone too far, or we're not going to fund this or that. But what I'm saying is, they're supposed to be a place of open ideas.
Yeah, well, don't worry, because the Smithsonian only gets $1 billion a year
from
of your
us.
Taxpayer money.
That's without your membership for your 10%
No, that's
off.
Not your $39 membership either. By the way, we're fans of the Smithsonian. I think they do great. I love the museum. But
it's great
for
America, actually. You want those kind of places.
But they got to play by the right rules. All right, we're on top of this. We got more coming up. We're going to take your calls at 800-684-3110. Also, support the work of the ACLJ. You can do that by going to aclj.org. I said this month I'm going to focus on this broadcast. We talk about all these cases. You know about those. But a lot of you are listening and watching to us right now. That's how you're hearing me. Support the work of the ACLJ, and this broadcast stays on the air. ACLJ.org. That's ACLJ.org. You can make an online contribution. We appreciate it.
Secchio. We are taking your phone calls to 1-800-684-3110. So that's up again at foxnews.com. About the students who were kicked out over the Smithsonian wearing the pro-life beanies. And like I said, the reason why it even said rosary on there, that's the name of the school. So, I mean, it was a double identifier that they were wearing it for the march, and it said rosary because that's the name of their school. I already said, like, if it gets to this level, so what if you just had, like, a Christian, like, because all the schools go with matching t-shirts and hats, exactly. Even the summertime, so maybe t-shirts, but you'll see them. And, like, of course, there's Catholic schools, Protestant schools,
yeah,
whatever, with names that are religious. It may have symbols that are religious. That, again, the fact that that's an issue with the Smithsonian, which you just walk into. I think so you have to go through a metal detector now, but there's
we have seven students right now that we're representing. We're getting information into the Smithsonian today to say, look, ACLJ's counsel here. We've already made public statements, so they know it. But we're going to get a letter in saying, hey, we're counsel here. Communicate with us. Here's what our demands are. And if necessary, we'll either get it resolved with the demands or we're going to get it resolved through litigation one way or the other. So this is starting to grow. Talking about things that are starting to grow and not in a good way, that is what's happening on our southern border. And the latest is an Iranian illegal, unlawful entrant on the terror watch list gets into the United States as an unlawful entrant, does not get picked up by ICE. And I'm not disrespecting ICE here. They got their hands full. But gets picked up by the Texas Highway Patrol on a stop. And this was the federal government that didn't want the states involved in this, remember? And this, Wes, individual was on the terror watch, is on the terror watch
list. Oh, yeah. He is actually the 39th person on the terror watch list apprehended since the 1st of October. The list, the rate of these people being caught has gone up dramatically in the last 2 years. For example, last year, under the Biden presidency, there were 98 people that were caught on the terror watch list. The year before that, President Trump's last year, there were 15. The year before that, President Trump's third year in office, there were 3. The number of terror suspects being apprehended on the border is directly related to our border being open and porous, and people around the world know that you can enter the United States illegally. And the other thing that's most disconcerting about this is that this man was caught not by the people who were supposed to catch him, but caught by the state patrol.
Yeah, well, and I don't want to blame
not at all.
Customs, Immigration, Border Control. We're not saying, none of us are saying that. They're overwhelmed.
Absolutely.
But the federal government did not want the states involved in this.
That's right. And not only that, this man is part of that group, and we don't even know how large the group is, of the unknown gotaways. They know about certain gotaways. They either observe them or electronically they observe them and can't catch them. Those are called known gotaways. He is part of the unknown gotaways. And when it comes down to it, Jay, concerning people on the terrorism watch list, we know they are here. We just don't know how many.
Yep.
We don't know who they are. We don't know where they are. Thankfully, this state trooper caught this particular person who's on that list.
Not surprisingly, DHS has no comment about this. But the truth is, if it wasn't for the work of Governor Abbott and his team and the Texas Department of Highway Patrols, this individual who's on the terror watch list, currently on the terror watch list from Iran, would have been operating inside the United States. And that in and of itself, Jordan, is a real problem.
Yeah, I mean, so you look at the years. There are 98 people have been arrested this year on the terror watch list because out of control at the board. The numbers are out of control. 15 in 2021. You go back to 2020, though, there were only 3. That's because the borders weren't porous, and that wasn't a good way to get into the country. So if you needed to get into, you didn't try to go through and kind of put yourself in with migrants as a terrorist. I mean, to get on that list is fairly serious, especially out of Iran. To me, What it underscores is, one, we don't have enough law enforcement at the border. We have them acting as humanitarian staff, not military. That didn't turn out well for our troops in Afghanistan when they weren't put in that position as well. 13 ended up killed because they weren't being utilized as military, which is to protect and kill, but to process people. And this issue, again, by chance they stop a vehicle with four or five of these people, I'm sure they know what to look for. And out of those four or five people, one of them is an Iranian terrorist.
Well, and we know this, and Will pointed this out just now in our chat, and this is, Wes, this is really troubling when you think about it. We know, for instance, our colleague, Mike Pompeo, has a fatwa against him from the Iranian regime.
Yeah.
I mean, currently, that's why he maintains high security profile.
Protection. A bounty to kill him.
But yes, yeah, I mean, they want to take him out because of Soleimani.
We are in danger, and we don't know, with all of these gotaways, whether they're observed or not observed, you know, we don't know who they are, we don't know what they're about. We do know that some of them are on the terror watch list. Since President Biden became President, Jay, 1.2 million people, according to the Customs and Border Protection Services, 1.2 million people have gotten away illegally crossing that border.
I mean, think about that number for a moment. 1,200,000 people.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And this one was very fortunate that the Texas Highway Patrol got him. That was a good thing. But this is a very dangerous time at our border. Now, we're trying to figure, remember they did away with Operation Talon, which was how you were dealing with the human trafficking, which is a gigantic problem that's affecting every city in the country. We were talking about it where our studios are based. Right down the street, they had it. They busted up a ring. Right around the corner, they busted up a ring. Because if you're on a major expressway, that's what they're happening. As a pastor, you dealt with that too. We always call you Colonel Smith because you are, but you were a chaplain and a pastor.
Yeah, that's one of the travesties of this open border and the Biden administration's refusal to do anything about it or take it seriously. It's not only the terrorism, the national security issue, but also the human trafficking, the sex trafficking, and most of those victims are underage females, as well as the fentanyl. There are 200 people a day in America being poisoned by fentanyl. Mm. And, you know, the other thing, you look at some of these stats, Jay, since October the 1st, this fiscal year, I looked this up this morning, there have been 304,045 gotaways reported by CBP. These are the ones they know about since October the 1st, 304,045. That is 2,400 gotaways per day.
304,000 that they know of.
Yes.
I mean, these numbers are staggering. I mean, they are staggering.
Absolutely. I mean, I think the first oversight committee hearing ongoing is this, right? It's happening today on fentanyl, yes, on the border. So finally, we have politicians in the House of Representatives with a Republican takeover who are willing to investigate this,
yes,
and if needed, subpoena the officials to testify.
You know, when you look at this situation, and I think you have to not look at it in a vacuum. I think you have to really look at it. This is dangerous for our country. It's dangerous for our national security. We've always said the border issue was not just a humanitarian crisis. It is a national security crisis, Wes.
Yeah. You know, this is my personal opinion, but I think I'm right, both as an American and as a colonel, and that is we are at risk of another major terror attack. And when it happens, Jay, we will not need another 9/11 commission to figure out why it happened. We will know why it happened because of this open border and the Biden administration's refusal to do anything about it.
You know, Jordan, I was thinking about this. I know we're talking about politics next segment, but I was thinking about this. With all of this going on, you look at the situation, inflation. When I was reading one of her ads, inflation, you know, the highest it's been since 1982, $30 trillion debt, porous border, Iranian individual on the terror watch list getting in, and yet the Republicans barely got the House.
Right. And that's leadership issues with the candidates specifically and who they trusted to actually be in charge. So even though now we have the number one issue, people say problem facing the country is a lack of leadership. Well, that goes to the top with Joe Biden. They were nervous about who Republicans put forward in a lot of these states. We may not love the Democrat, but this person seems way too out of control to be, and way too political, too involved in side issues, and not enough on governance. To get into the other issues domestically, which every president wants to focus on domestic issues, you have to get some big things right. Stability, international stability, security stability. You can't have the border kind of issues. Or you do what President Trump did. You start seriously addressing them and getting the message out to people trying to cross that you're not going to be put up in a 5-star hotel in New York if you come here, which is what is happening right now. There's actually illegal immigrants protesting in New York City right now because they're being moved to facilities that house them, and they're being taken out of 5-star hotels. Hotels that cost $1,000 more a night.
Listen to what Tom Cotton had to say. We'll play that in a moment.
This didn't just happen. It's not an accident. It's not a bad hand that Joe Biden was dealt.
Right.
It's the deliberate choices he's made all along to stop the enforcement of our border and to allow up to 6 million illegal aliens to enter our country in just 2 years in his tenure. If there's a terrorist attack in this country from someone who crossed our southern border, Joe Biden will be squarely responsible for that attack.
Wes, that's exactly what you said.
Absolutely.
Senator Cotton agrees.
This is on him, because the administration could do many things to secure the border. They are virtually doing nothing, and we are at risk.
We just found out the House is going to vote tomorrow on excluding, removing Congresswoman Omar from the Foreign Affairs Committee. And we said we had a congressman that has changed their position. Congresswoman Sparks has said she will support Kevin McCarthy in this move. Support the work of the ACLJ. Support this broadcast. You can do that by going to ACLJ.org. Last segment coming up. We're going to take your calls. I'm going to open up the phone lines now. 1-800-684-3110. We'll talk politics. We'll talk policy. 800-684.
All right, welcome back to Secular. We'll take your calls, too. 1-800-684-3110.
I have a question for you. Nikki Haley said she's announcing, she's letting it know she's going to run for president. She's making a formal announcement February 15th.
That's right.
The second formal announcement of a candidate in the Republican Party.
That's right. So she'll be the second person officially in the race on the Republican side. Not a surprise at all that Nikki Haley has made this decision. She's a prolific fundraiser.
We've worked closely with her.
Yeah, she's a prolific fundraiser. She has both the experience as a two-term governor and as ambassador to the United Nations. Again, I think it's serious. She will have serious support because she is one of those candidates, people who are looking for the non-Trump candidate, who's still like a conservative candidate, got the international experience. She's been, again, a prolific fundraiser, but she's the second in. She's not going to be the last.
No, you think it's going to be a pretty big group, right?
I think another South Carolinian is probably going to be in Tim Scott. I mean, he's doing the Lincoln Day dinner in Iowa, the big dinner there. You usually don't do that unless you're stepping your toe in. Also another prolific fundraiser.
Yes.
So you could have two out of South Carolina. Well, one senator, one governor, and of course we haven't got into like the
Ron DeSantis.
DeSantis, Pompeo,
Pence,
Youngkin.
Pence. It could be a lot of people running, which helps
Ted Cruz
give you different voices. Well, let's take some phone calls. 1-800-684-3110. We'll also take some comments on our social media as well. Let's go ahead and take Teresa out of Virginia.
Hi, I appreciate you guys so much. So question, I worked for a county government for over 34 years, and our minimum secured files, we had to at least sign an out card out so it could be tracked who has it and when they took it out. The more, you know, sensitive the information, there was somebody behind a counter and you could not get that record without dealing with them and it was logged in. So we're talking about classified documents with the archives office. How come there, and with modern technology even, how come there's not somebody there signing these documents out and then tracking them, popping up even on your computer that, hey, this has been out for 3 weeks, contact this person, this is who took it out. How come they don't have something like that going on?
I have no idea.
Well,
I mean, you're right.
That's how it works for members of Congress and lower-level officials. That's not how it works for presidents and vice presidents.
No, because vice presidents and presidents,
they can
specifically
request,
can say, I want this document.
And their offices are secure facilities.
Yeah,
and like we heard from Mike Pompeo,
his house.
Private home was a secured facility.
The FBI, by the way, said they've completed the search, or at least the lawyers are saying FBI has completed the search of President Biden's Rehoboth Beach House, and shockingly, they found no documents with classified markings, which is interesting because how long has that house been sitting there with?
Oh, they knew it was covered for weeks.
Months, probably.
Well, now we don't go back to November. The FBI was searching pit bikes.
That's why this whole thing is. Okay, so they're going to wear that as a badge of honor. They found one location where they didn't find anything,
which is your beach house.
Yeah. I mean, but the idea here, this is where the whole thing is askew.
I don't think they're done, sir. I think there's still storage facilities. I guarantee you this is not the last place.
I think you're right.
They said there's going to be others. They didn't say other.
I want to go back on the politics for a moment because you got Nikki Haley announced. Former President Trump has announced. Ambassador Haley's announced. There's a lot of talk about Tim Scott, very popular senator from
Ron
South
DeSantis
Carolina. Ron DeSantis is making all the moves on that.
Yes.
So very popular governor of Florida, one with big numbers. So the people that are coming out already that are likely to run are really proficient fundraisers.
Yeah, they've got big app. They have an apparatus that thinks they could get to a couple hundred million at least.
Yes.
And that's just in early stages of the primary. That's just what you need to raise to compete.
So what happens as you get more?
If you get to a actual primary vote, some of these people will not even make it.
Yeah.
To the actual
first primaries, and next is a year from now, right?
Yeah, like, you know, a lot drop out of like Iowa caucus kind of thing, which is not an actual official vote. I mean, so, you know, you might not, if you're not, even if you raise the initial bit of money, because I worked on one of those campaigns before, you could be out in 3 weeks.
Right.
You know, you could be, or not even make it to the votes. So this is all, what I'm to say is, we don't know how many people are going to end up actually on the debate stage.
Yes,
because those debates don't really start until right before people start voting and while they're voting in states. It's like, you know, you go in like a week before, it's things like that. Who makes it to the debate stage, we don't know. If it's 10 people, Donald Trump is in the lead right now. I mean, and if 10 stay in it, it's his to lose.
Just
based off 25 to 30%. You don't need more than that of 10 people. If you get that, even Ron DeSantis has got, I mean, I think the only person even within 15 points of that is DeSantis. That's before he's even on this.
How does the former president repair the Georgia situation? Because if you don't win Georgia, you don't win the general election.
I think, well, there's two parts there. One is you have to win the primary first.
Right.
So your focus never focus on the general election until you've got the primary. So I don't think they're worried about that.
Okay.
I think what his first goal from his team is going to be is please have all these other people join. He'll do his thing and likely get, I mean, I don't see him getting under 25% of the vote in a primary. So if he keeps it at that level, it's pretty tough to beat. Unless there's some consolidation, which people always talk about.
Never happens. It doesn't ever seem to happen.
We're not the Democrats.
The Democrats do consolidate. Why don't you explain that for people a little bit?
Remember the pressure on like Mayor Pete? He was like a holdout?
Yeah.
And there was significant pressure on him, and you know, but the others fell by the wayside pretty quickly when it was clear they didn't have a path or they were running out of money, and they kind of unite around each other, even after calling each other horrible. I mean, Harris was calling Biden racist on stage, and she's the vice president. So they're better at doing that. Republicans, the issue is if you've all raised this $250 million, your donors say, I want you to stick with it. Maybe there'll be some shift. Again, I think it's going to be a tough one to predict because Trump came out very early. Now you have Nikki Haley. I think once now Nikki Haley's in, you've got the second. I think you'll start a cascade.
I think you're going to see this month and next. I think you're going to see three or four people in her.
Yeah, and it's easier for the ones who are not currently serving in government to make this call. I think DeSantis will be a little later.
He can. He can wait.
Yeah, because he's already got a national profile as much as he wants. And a fundraising machine that could, but you do have to start a federal account. So this is the issue that's your official campaign account. State and federal is different. But he's got the PACs, all those things, of course, as a governor of the third biggest state in the country.
It's interesting because what's interesting to me here is, and you said it before, chaos candidates do not work. So,
they work in primaries sometimes,
but you saw in Trump in his campaigning, he went to a very, I would call very traditional campaigning method.
Yeah,
unlike him.
He showed up and went to like the place you would
Zestos.
Go in New Hampshire, got the photos with the staff, let the people kind of touch him, you know, get up in your face, be able to talk to you. And it also builds up his kind of like celebrity aspect of him. Everybody wants a photo.
Yeah.
Everybody wants to talk to him. He's a presence when he walks in the room to a places like that. And everybody else has got to try to capture that. I will tell you, I've been with a lot of politicians. You walk in those places and people are like, oh, God, here we go again. Because it's like the only three or four states that have this.
Yeah.
And within that, there's like two or three cities that are big enough in those states to even have the politicians show up like that. And it's like they're used to it. But Donald Trump is still a celebrity and former president. So he walks in. He's already got that kind of factor. Again, I'm not like endorsing him. I'm just telling you the reality is, if he pulls where he is right now and 10 of them stay in the race, he can't lose. He can lose if you get down to maybe three candidates.
Yeah,
I think if there's more than three, it's very tough for him to lose. He would have to. The only way he loses is if he destroys his own campaign
or the legal stuff, which is part of the same thing. But even that, I think,
he uses to his advantage usually. So. Support the work of the ACLJ, aclj.org. That's aclj.org. We'll talk to you tomorrow.